And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. And it is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is June 21st, 2017. And this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today, back on BBS Radio, we are with Doug Newsom and Donald Newsom. We are the team that is for the people, by the people, that will make your show and this show incredible. We want to also thank our sponsor, our incredible sponsor, the Protect Company, that is all out and about in the world to go and help the world defend itself. Today, more than ever, we have people to be vigilant and to be capable to defend themselves, and Protect is the company that does this. Let me introduce you Itayel Gil with his incredible work.
We live in a world where terrorism can strike at any given moment. So I spent my entire life in trying to make the world a safer place. I know what it's like to live in terror, and I don't wish that on anyone. If the Protect Company can expand beyond the Israeli borders into a business that is truly global, we will be able to minimize as many casualties and death worldwide.
Success is in the mind. One guy will say success is if I have millions in the bank, but he's still miserable. So materialistic, he's successful, but if he's happy, no, it has to have a combination that you have enough to do the hobbies you love, to have enough quality time with the family. Well, my wife, she's my best friend. We've been together for 16 years. She's very, very smart and spicy. She knows how to negotiate real well. I even offered her a job in Protect, leave the bank and work for me, but you know, for the moment, she's gonna stay in the bank. I spend many, many hours with my kids. They're in my environment all the time. They can feel me every day. It's not that I'm gone forever. They think I'm a little bit of a different father than the other fathers. You know, I have an extreme job. Go!
My life be like.
Yeah. Okay, go, 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 go! Go to the quarters! Yay! Go!
I was a soldier from a very young age, from 18. I was exposed to, tactics, weapons. Later on, I was recruited to an elite counter-terror team. It's called Yamam. Being in the counter-terror team for many, many years, active as special police team, I've done more than one arrest in my life, and I discovered that lots of things you learn in a so-called training center, dojo, doesn't work in real time. I had to come up with some solutions that will work in real time against certain aggressive criminals. We deal in combat and tactical training.
I'll go for this, but if you pull.
Wait on him.
You can still get me in the back if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But you're going back here.
Yeah, I'm just going back.
Can you imagine this 4 hours a day?
Yep.
Lovely, isn't it?
You know, I've been nagging you for a long, long time to get this program started with security, intelligence, and counter-terror studies.
I'm convinced that we have to go to this
avenue.
Yes.
See? If you hit the right people, you can get them to participate and do what you want.
In the manner of speaking.
No, I'm against violence, believe me. You know, very gently. You see, but it all comes to who you hit.
I cannot change anyone's mindset. You know, if someone's locked down, he says, oh, it's just a businessman, he wants to make money. Of course, we're business and we do want to make money, and it's not a crime. But we also want to save lives.
And that was Protect with Itayel Gil, the sponsor of the show. It's to give everybody the opportunity to stay alive, with all the challenges that you guys face in the street, we all face in the world. I'm from, talking to you from Israel, a country that learned how to defend itself in every moment of the day. You know, we all are vigilant and we all alert, and we have people also to volunteer to work together with the authority in case of emergency. And something that we all need to think about it, if we can create some kind of format to teach the world you know, how to defend itself, because we can go, you know, state by state, organize a very nice program, teach the kids like a drill that we have in school for fire, in case there is an active shooter, so what to do. You know, you don't want to be a lame duck. You don't want to sit tight and wait for the shooter to come and kill. We need to act, and acting needs a training, and it doesn't take much. It takes, though, a responsibility to make a decision to make this plan, because it's a new day, and not everybody is ready to make a change. But the change is coming, the change is here, and we are in the world of integration of information. So why don't you use what we can offer, like Israeli can offer you to defend yourself, to teach you how to be vigilant, and what clues you need to get in order for you to understand the situation. It seems to me that in Europe, one of the frustration that Gil had, Itai Gil said that yes, that most of the security guys don't carry arms. And of course, in America, it's the opposite. We have, you know, the freedom of to bear arms. But and of course, the Democrats are taking it the all extra way to try to dismiss the value of protection. But we need to find some kind of equilibrium. You know, if you have a normal person, a reliable person, a trustworthy person that is vigilant and is on the go, and in time of need, he does all the harm, it's something that can save many lives. And as we all say, every life in this world matters. So after we said that and we say thank you to the sponsor, we want to say thank you to everybody else on, you know, BBS Radio that stay put. And I was away for a little while, but I love you and missed you, and I hope that you missed me. Now let's go on to the rest of the story. Coming from the Middle East, we can see a change, a wind of change. And let me tell you, I know that you guys all up and about Donald Trump. You all so agitated about the investigation and what the possibility that Russia got interfered in the American election. And I want to say something. First of all, it's not so easy to interfere in American election. Let's give it to America. America been around for too long that everybody can come and meddle with it. All right? So we have our system that protects itself. Now, having said that, the Russian comments is always, you know, America interfere in every other election all over the world. So why can't anybody else do that? Given that it's true, because I'm not going to say something that it's not, America does interfere. If it's a democratic way of being that, you know, you actually introduce some kind of understanding, maybe the world is changed. Maybe we have to consider what actually interfering is. And if sending money to be the prime minister of Israel is a democracy, okay, so what's the difference will be if the Russian will do that in America? I'm saying that because every time we point a finger, two fingers point back to us. And you know that for a fact. We have to be really, really clear about what we are asking. So if you're asking that if Russia is interfering, or if there is a collusion, or if there is a understanding, I don't know when you turn the page on Russia deal now that she becomes the enemy, but I remember 2013 she saved the day by giving you know, taking all the diplomatic efforts to get away all the Syrian regime chemical weapon. Remember 2013. Russia was in play in Syria, and America was really devastated by the chemical weapon. And of course, you didn't want to collude with the Russian forces. And the decision was made not to go and give the authority to the Russian. That was a diplomatic cooperation that worked well. I don't understand what changed since then, that all of a sudden talking to the Russian becomes, you know, they become the enemy of the state. We need to understand that when you have a very powerful country like Russia that want to play good, okay, let's give it to them. They do not know to play in our way, like in every other game that you have. All we need to give the time for them to play. And you know, I have a segment that I wanted to start in, you know, a little later, but my talks arrived to this point. So let's try to get Oliver Stone's view on how the U.S. misunderstand Putin. It has a little Russian in between, but it's all mostly in English. Please stay put, because Oliver Stone see a movie and he can understand the story. And Europe is not America, and Middle East definitely is not America. So we need to cooperate with understanding or misunderstanding of people. So let's listen to Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone has won Oscars for Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, and Midnight Express. But his latest project took him about as far from Hollywood as you can get. Over 2 years, he recorded 20 hours of interviews with Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, getting his perspective on everything from last year's US election, the Syrian conflict, and tensions with NATO.
Сегодня это внешнеполитический инструмент Соединенных Штатов. Там нет союзников. Там есть только вассалы. Когда страна становится членом НАТО, ей уже очень трудно сопротивляться давлению со стороны такой крупной страны, лидера НАТО, как США. И там легко появляется, может появиться все, что угодно. И система противоракетной обороны, и новые базы, и, если потребуется, и новые ударные комплексы. А нам что делать?
His four-part documentary, The Putin Interviews, is airing this week on Sky in the UK and Showtime in the US. He joins me now in the FT studio in New York to discuss the series.
So the last time we met was Venezuela, was the film, your film about Hugo Chavez.
And about the eight other presidents of South America.
That's right. At the time, he told me that the West viewed Chavez incorrectly, had the wrong impression of him. Does the West have a similarly wrong impression about Vladimir Putin?
I think so. I'd say so, yeah. I think a big divide. And I'm not going to say that I have all the answers by any means. I got to know him during the shooting of Snowden because I went, the last scene we were shooting in Moscow, and Ed himself was in the movie to finish the movie. And at that point, we moved their cameras over 2 days later to the Kremlin and quietly went in and started this series of interviews that lasted 2 years, four different interviews and approximately 20 hours of film.
So several trips, 20 hours of film.
Yeah.
And you clearly enjoyed his company. You seem to look from the
episode. I always try to, whatever you make a movie, whether it's a documentary or a film, you want it to work. With actors, I would encourage my actors, and as I said somewhere else, if I'm the best friend of the actor while I'm making the movie. I try to be. I'm rooting for him to succeed or her.
With that in mind, do you have any misgivings about his policies, about the actions of the Russians?
Well, you're asking for my opinion now. You have to, inside that framework of about 4 hours of film, you'll find very little opinion from me. You know, so it's. First of all, I'd like to say that it presents his point of view as well as I could, the same way that my Snowden film presented Snowden's version of the story.
Do you trust that he was telling you the truth in the interviews? I mean, he said that they didn't hack the election.
Hacking an election. What does hacking mean? Hacking means getting into somebody's computer. It's possible that because hacking is a fashion of the day, and every country is doing it, independent actors are doing it, no one seems to know who's hacking who. And that is a very important, relevant question. I don't think people understand this issue of hacking. I've tried to educate myself. I'm not an expert, but the Snowden movie certainly comes into that arena. So let's say it's possible that they got into the computers of the DNC, but we don't know that for sure. And when the American intelligence, three of them, not 17, three of them said what they said, that was classified as an assessment. Right. It was not an estimate. Right. This was a thin assessment. And veteran journalists and veteran people who worked in the surveillance community pointed that out to me on day one. They said that this is not a normal procedure, that the CIA the NSA and the FBI, with a week and a half to go in the Obama administration, suddenly put out this assessment. It's basically a slap in the face of the new incoming president and saying that you're a Manchurian candidate and that you're in office because of the Russian interference. This is stunning. I mean, that's as hostile as any administration can be to another one.
Can I just go back to the film and to Putin, particularly on Syria? Yeah. Now, you spent some time with him talking about the Syrian strategy and what Russia was doing in Syria.
Yeah.
Human Rights Watch says Russia has committed war crimes in Syria with the bombing of Aleppo, civilians, children killed. Yeah. I mean, going back to this point about your personal feelings of the man and of the policies, does any of that cloud the way
when
you
I see Syria, Human Rights Watch, as you know, has been sometimes accused of politicizing situations, certainly in South America, here or there. The United States has used it at will. There's all kinds of internet rights organizations that come out of the woodwork at times and say things. But the United States has used human rights as a way to advance its foreign policy interests. You know, why is Saudi Arabia never brought up on serious things, and Syria is, and so forth and so on. I don't doubt that the Assad regime is a tough one, but it was a secular one.
But you're dubious about these claims about Russia?
Well, yes, of course I am. And I'm saying to you that when the United States went into Iraq, broke Iraq, as Colin Powell said, and completely brought chaos to the Middle East on a new level with all these refugees, and then did it again in Libya, when Mr. Putin says in the interview that if this happens again to Syria, which has been in an alliance with us since the 1970s, there will be complete chaos in the Middle East, and we are only 1,500 miles from Damascus on the map. Right. There is a significant component of Muslims in Russia, about 13%, something like that. They are integrated into the Russian Federation, but there's a possibility that the hotheads, the younger people, will be affected by Muslims preaching hatred and this form of terrorism. That's what concerns Russia. Okay. They have a link to Syria, but they also and an alliance, but they also have a fear that the Caucasus would be engulfed once again in flames and revolt, like there was in the Chechen War of 2000, the last one, the second war. I just want to say this is a big issue if it's next door to you.
Right.
And they are much closer to them than they are to us.
Final question, very quickly. How, in your view, should the U.S. approach Putin and Russia now with a new administration?
In this matter of Trump, I think there is a significant battle going on between the concept of the presidency and who really runs America, which is at the heart of democracy. Where is the real conflict? Who is the enemy? Are we the enemy to ourselves? Are we in the grip of a dictator? The dictator is money. The dictator is this state that exists. Can we control it? These are questions we have to ask. We have to examine our own country.
Okay.
Is Putin relations? Yes, of course. I think he has said repeatedly, I'm open for dialogue. He'd like to have a better relationship. It would be in our interest to fight the war of terror with them. They're very good at it. Number two, they can help us with the environment. They can help us with nuclear weapons. We could cut back. Remember the old Gorbachev-Reagan way of doing things? They were talking about cutting back. They did for a while. There's been no peace dividend since then.
Okay.
There is an interest in the United States in money and making products of war and selling them to other countries and militarizing regions such as the Middle East. That's the end result, as well as refugees spilling over from every war-torn country going to your Britain, your France. I can only see more chaos in the future if you follow this program. America's interests are not necessarily Europe's. You should deal with that issue.
Okay. Oliver Stone, thanks for coming.
Thank you, Matthew.
All right, we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with the incredible, impossible truth. Now, you know, Oliver Stone had a case. He said, who is the enemy? Who is the enemy? Are the American people are their own enemy at this point? Because it seems like the Democrats want to create anarchies because they never gave up their idea of wanting to be in the president's seat by all cost. They did that to President Bush, and in the beginning, we didn't pay attention to what they're doing. They were talking so much bad. It was 2000, year 2000, they were talking so much bad, and they were fighting, and they were like ridiculing the president. And then 9/11 happens. Then 9/11 happens. For God's sake! Now you, what you guys are doing again? You are playing the same guys, you know, the same routine. Now we have also people that starting to shoot the representative, the congressman. Do you believe it? The servant people that serve you and work for you, people that work from night and day to help you. And you can say whatever they you want about, you know, some people that, you know, they are lavish or whatever. The idea is that public servants dedicate their life, their family life, to serve you. And you guys have to be a little more appreciative about it. And Sanders, get back with your rhetorics, because Hamas is not a friendly voice. And anybody like Corbyn in the other side of the moons in England that thinks that, you know, Hamas is his friends, you can find them, you know, in all this bombing in England. We have to start making sense of what we are doing, our action. This investigation that is taking place for the collusion, you are disturbing the safeguards of America. Now, I know that the FBI organization is a very respectful one, and I, for a second, I have friends there, and I respect and love them. And I know how much they give to the country. And I think that what happened with the president was very troubling, because the president has the right to do whatever he thinks necessary. And if he wants to do or change a personnel, it's not, you know, nobody can go and say, okay, let's create a problem because he changed a personnel. You guys are making too much. And we have people that say it, people of a very, very incredible knowledge of legal system, like Alan Dershowitz. Let's listen to what Alan Dershowitz had to say.
Developing tonight, President Trump has been the object of criticism for calling the Russia probe a witch hunt. But now, months into this investigation, his descriptor is beginning to potentially look more accurate. David Brooks of the New York Times, far from a fan of the president, is raising a red flag as to the speed with which accusations are flying through the media. Watch.
I'm actually getting more uncomfortable with this whole deal, thinking that maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. And I'm bothered by the lack of emerging evidence about the underlying crime, that there was actually collusion or coordination between the Trump White House.
That was shocking. Joining me now, Alan Dershowitz, Professor Emeritus of Harvard Law School. Great to have you with us.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you. I've been looking forward to being on
the show. Thank you. We've been looking forward to having you. I want to put up one more piece of David Brooks's piece, because as we say, he has been highly critical of this president. So this is a very big about face for him. He said, quote, "Things are so bad that I'm going to have to give Trump the last word." On June 15th, he tweeted, and he goes on to say, this is the tweet that he refers to, "They made up a phony collusion with the Russian story, found zero proof, so now they go for obstruction of justice on the phony story." And the tweet goes on, and then he comes back to say, "Unless there's some new revelation, that may turn out to be pretty accurate commentary." Your thoughts?
Well, I think he's right. I think what we're seeing it from both sides. Yeah. What happens in America is, if you don't like somebody politically, lock them up, throw the key away. Each side criminalizes political differences with the other side. They did it with Hillary Clinton with the espionage and the email server. That was never going to be a real crime. And they're doing it with Donald Trump. And I'm against it in both instances. But I am getting such heck from my liberal Democratic friends. How dare you stand in the way of this prosecution and impeachment? Well, I'm going to stand in the way, because I don't believe the Constitution permits the prosecution of a president, especially for obstruction of justice, on the basis of him doing what he's constitutionally entitled to do, firing the director of the FBI, even telling him to terminate an investigation. As to the Russian collusion, the worst case scenario, it's still not a crime. Maybe it should be a crime, but there's nothing in the statute books that would make it a crime. If Donald Trump called Putin and said, "Hey, Putin, help me become president and I'll be good to Russia. That would be terrible, but it wouldn't be a crime. And we have to understand the difference between doing something bad
some
politically
people say that
and committing
would be treason.
A crime. It wouldn't be treason.
Why not?
Because the president is elected and he's entitled to make judgments about what's best for the United States.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you see plenty of people reporting on this who would say if that's what happened, that would be collusion.
That's
and
right.
That would show that he worked with a foreign country to undermine a U.S. election. And people say, you know, that's the underpinning of our entire society, of our election process. So you're saying it would be reprehensible, but not illegal.
It wouldn't be illegal because the Putin could, it depends on how you undercut. Obviously, if he hacked voting machines, that would be one thing. But if he leaked tweets, that's what Democrats do.
That's what happened, right? I mean, it was like nasty, embarrassing stuff that came out on emails is exactly what we're talking about here.
It's nasty stuff, but it's not criminal.
In terms of indictment, you can't indict a sitting president, correct?
Well, you know, that's what the Justice Department says. They had a ruling back in 1973. They reiterated it more recently, saying the only process is if you think a president's committed a crime, you have to impeach him first. Remove him from office, then you can indict him and try him. But you can't try a sitting president for a crime he committed while president or while campaigning.
And that's because he's elected by the American people. So in order to put him through that scrutiny, he would have to be removed.
Imagine if a single prosecutor could end the presidency of somebody by simply indicting them and saying you have to be in a courtroom for the next 3 months defending yourself. Look, the Supreme Court made a terrible 9-0 decision with Clinton. When Bill Clinton was sued by Paula Jones, the Supreme Court 9-0 said he could be sued while he was a sitting president. That's dumb. A sitting president has a job to do.
What's happened is a political society, we've learned through Watergate and Whitewater that if you bring enough charges, if you put enough smoke out there, you are able to sort of really make someone's agenda impossible to carry
out. And that's what the Democrats have done to the Republicans. That's what the Republicans have done to the Democrats. And the big losers are the American people. It better be broken because we're entitled to better from our elected officials on both sides. You don't like a candidate? Campaign against him. Go to Georgia. Help the Democrat win the election if you don't like the president.
And we are back. Alan Dershowitz couldn't say it better. It's the American people who pay the price. It's the American people that don't get their case taken care of. It's all the, you know, the representative that start fighting like they are in kindergarten, who won the award, the Beauty Queen Award. For God's sake, go back to work and start doing and taking care of America. And as far as I'm concerned, you guys are the leaders of the free world. You need to set an example. Because if Europe is right now is bleeding, is exploding, is in difficulties, and in midst of this, they need to make an agreement, an economical agreement, while fighting, you know, the terrorists, extremist terrorists, the American people needs to stay put and start helping, because this globalized world needs your attention, and you have no luxury to go and disturb the president of the USA. And as far as I'm concerned, for some reason, they feel too comfortable doing that. I remember the days that if anybody just mentioned the president or something about it, or for God's sake, make a picture of something, you know, devastating, it wouldn't stand. America has changed, become really, really soft on this one. But when you have to protect your leader, you're actually protecting your backbone. So I think that there is no case against the president. Russia is not the enemy. The only enemy that they have is those Democrats that still, you know, still think that they didn't lose the election. And wow, they're really, really bad. Anyway, let's go back. We have our champion. Our incredible Trey Gowdy is one of the most incredible human beings that I know in this universe of mine, and I know a few. I speak a few languages, and in all those languages, Trey Gowdy is my superstar. And today he has, he's from South Carolina, by the way, which state that I love. I lived and I still have a home there, I hope. I think that is exceptional. Trey Gowdy had an interview today on Fox News. Let's listen to it. I hope we can make it.
Testimony, former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson appears in front of the House Intelligence Committee. Remember, that committee continues its own investigation into what happened between Russia and the Trump campaign, if anything. Trey Gowdy's on that hearing. He's on that committee. He's with me now. And, sir, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I want to cut through all of this for our viewers so that we can understand this together. Where are we and where are we going? Take the first question.
This is the simplest way to understand it. All things criminal or quasi-criminal, that is the special counsel. That is Bob Mueller. That is not Congress. So if it's not criminal or quasi-criminal, the House has a role to play. And we've been asked to answer four questions. What did the Russians do in 2016? With whom, if anyone, did they do it? What was the U.S. government's response during the pendency of those attacks in 2016? And then there's the issue of the leaks and the unmasking. Jay Johnson addresses three of those four congressional tranches, and most importantly, because he was part of the intelligence community and the head of DHS in 2016, when did we know what Russia was doing and what was our response? Because clearly it was before the November election.
So if he's responsible for three of the four, what's the fourth thing that he's not responsible for? What will you not hear about today?
I'd be shocked if we ask any questions of Jay Johnson with respect to leaks. There may be. I don't pretend to know what others will ask, but I've never heard his name connected with any leaks, and I'd be surprised if that question was asked.
Okay, let me go through a series of questions. What happened when Bob Mueller met with members of the committee yesterday?
Again, that is an effort to keep our lanes completely clear. And Bill, as you know, I used to be in that lane. I want to stay so far away from what Bob Mueller is doing. I don't want to interview the same witnesses. I don't want to get involved in immunity discussions. He has a critically important role to play, and I want to get the heck out of his way. That was my purpose in meeting with him.
Do you want to share with us the content or any of the context of that conversation?
Only this. I have a lot of respect for him. I knew him when he was the FBI director. He has a really, really hard job in a hyper-political environment running a serious investigation. But if anyone can do that, I think it would be Bob Mueller.
Do you have evidence of collusion today?
No, I have seen no evidence of collusion.
Okay. Schiff, a Democrat, said he thinks there is evidence of collusion.
Oh, he said a lot more than that,
Bill.
What
does he know that you don't know?
Nothing. He said a lot more than that. He said that he's seen evidence that's more than circumstantial but not direct. He said he's seen evidence, but he can't tell us what it is. He's seen evidence that doesn't rise to the level of beyond a reasonable doubt. One reason that Bob Mueller's investigation, I think, ultimately will be respected, and congressional investigations in the past have not been, is we have a tendency to politicize almost everything. We are 10% into the witnesses that we're going to interview, and yet there are members of Congress who are prejudging the outcome, who are relying on this, I've seen evidence, but I can't tell you what it is. Nothing undercuts the confidence of your viewers, quite like someone saying, I know more than you do, it's really bad, and I'm not going to tell you what it is.
All right, here's another allegation, obstruction of justice. You're a prosecutor. Based on what you know, does that stand up today?
I have no way of knowing. I have not interviewed a single solitary witness. There are two really important witnesses in that tranche. One is Jim Comey and one is President Trump. And I am sure that Bob Mueller is going to interview everyone on the periphery that can help answer that question.
So you're leaving the door open on that. You have not closed that. That was not a yes or no answer.
I never close doors until the last witness has been interviewed. I think it is reckless and irresponsible to do so. I have no idea what the last witness is going to say. So why would I prejudge the outcome of an investigation until it's over?
Jay Johnson is going to say the following in part 45 minutes from now on screen. In 2016, the Russian government, at the direction of Russian President Vladimir Putin himself, orchestrated cyber attacks on our nation for the purpose of influencing our election, plain and simple. He will also state there is no evidence that votes were changed. And that is a critical point in all of this. I think sometimes, arguably, it gets lost. But this is the key. Russia tried to hack and influence, but we don't know how far they achieved their ends. Is that our understanding as of today?
Yeah, that's a really good summary, and I think you put your finger on the seminal part of Jay Johnson's testimony, which is there is no evidence that voter tallies or voter totals were changed. There's frankly no evidence that the Russians were successful in their efforts to infiltrate the voter infrastructure. The third point I would say is, okay, if we knew this was going on during the election, what did we do about it? All of what we're doing now, Bill, is retrospective. If we knew the Russians had done it in the past and we knew they were doing it in 2016, what was the U.S. government's response in the summer and fall of 2016?
That's a very interesting point, because Jay Johnson had authority then. So clearly you have to ask him that and figure that out.
Yes, he did. Yes, sir.
Labor Day, you said last night, you hope to have this wrapped up. Is that realistic? Because by Washington terms, that's flying.
It is flying. We are picking up the pace. There are a number of witness interviews that have already been scheduled, quite frankly. In all candor, Bill, we were a little slow out of the gates, but I think we have that corrected. The most important thing is to agree on the witness list, and then you can start structuring the order of the witnesses. Tom Rooney and I are doing the questioning on the Republican side. We are willing to come up early. We're willing to stay late. We're willing to work weeks that we're not in session. I think we owe it to the American people to do this as well, as efficiently as we can.
I opened this interview by asking two questions. Where are we and where are we going? Answer the second question now. Where is this headed?
On the House side, I hope it's going towards a report that your viewers can have confidence in answering those four questions that we were asked to answer.
Criminal or not, sir?
I have no idea. That's Bob Mueller. That's my old job. I'm not qualified to speak to that.
Understood. Trey Gowdy, thank you for your candor.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you in 45 minutes inside that hearing room. Thank you, Shannon.
All right. We are back with Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. With Doug Newsom helping us here. Thank you. I'm saying that, Gowdy is, Drake Gowdy is one of the best in the House of Congress, and I'm sure that many people can second it. And, you know, he's also internationally known by now, because in all these hearings he's outstanding, and his clear understanding of what the facts are and how really there is no collusion, and that's what he said today. Now let's wait for the investigation to keep on going. We're not going to make judgment until the last witness was heard. So that's what he said, and that's what we're going to say anyway. One thing, we want America back. We want America on her way back to be the leader of the free world that we all love. And I was watching TV, and I was watching videos about film. And there is something that strike me. And I say it because I love America with all my heart. And I say it because what made me be so American when I was very young is the notion of how proud I am to have American friends, and how proud I am in being in America. America gave an example to the world. You know, it was that laughter of a soldier. It was that handshake. And it was like a buddy-buddy kind of relationship that America still has. But today, if you watch the movies, you watch America that has a back door to it, which is not flattering. I know that it's all about image. I know that America has its good side and bad side. But let's try to, you know, upgrade a little the image that we're portraying outside America, so maybe people can relate back to why we love her so much. Okay, now we have a music for you, which I want to say to God that I'm back here. It was a struggle, and I'm so happy to be here with you. I miss a very, very important part in history, but I guess that it will be written. But I think that God has a very big, factors in all the turmoil. We need to feel that He's present and He's with us, and we want to say hallelujah. Let's listen to a song.
I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah.
Hallelujah, that's for God Almighty, that to keep love, protect all human beings around the world. And in time of challenge, you know, all the grace of the world is showing up. And today in England, we have a very, very incredible, you know, Her Majesty the Queen of England spoke. She had a speech, and it's really important because it's about what England is going to do next. Let's listen to her.
My Lord and members of the House of Commons, my government's priority is to secure the best possible deal as the country leaves the European Union. My ministers are committed to working with Parliament, the devolved administrations, business and others to build the widest possible consensus on the country's future outside the European Union. A bill will be introduced to repeal the European Communities Act and provide certainty for individuals and businesses. This will be complemented by legislation to ensure that the United Kingdom makes a success of Brexit, establishing new national policies on immigration, international sanctions, nuclear safeguards, agriculture and fisheries. My government will seek to maintain a deep and special partnership with European allies, and to forge new trading relationships across the globe. New bills on trade and customs will help to implement an independent trade policy, and support will be given to help British businesses export to markets around the world. My ministers will strengthen the economy so that it supports the creation of jobs and generates the tax revenues needed to invest in the National Health Service, schools, and other public services. My government will continue to improve the public finances while keeping taxes low. It will spread prosperity and opportunity across the country through a new modern industrial strategy. My government will work to attract investment in infrastructure to support economic growth. Legislation will be introduced to ensure the United Kingdom remains a world leader in new industries, including electric cars and commercial satellites. A new bill will also be brought forward to deliver the next phase of high-speed rail. My government will continue to work to ensure that every child has the opportunity to attend a good school, and that all schools are fairly funded. My ministers will work to ensure people have the skills they need for the high-skilled, high-wage jobs of the future, including through a major reform of technical education. The national living wage will be increased so that people who are on the lowest pay benefit from the same improvements in earnings as higher-paid workers. My ministers will seek to enhance rights and protections in the modern workplace. My government will make further progress to tackle the gender pay gap and discrimination against people on the basis of their race, faith, gender, disability, or sexual orientation. Legislation will be brought forward to protect the victims of domestic violence and abuse. My government will reform mental health legislation and ensure that mental health is prioritised in the National Health Service in England. Proposals will be brought forward to ban unfair tenant fees, promote fairness and transparency in the housing market, and help ensure more homes are built. My ministers will work to improve social care and will bring forward proposals for consultation. My government will ensure fairer markets for consumers. This will include bringing forward measures to help tackle unfair practices in the energy market to help reduce energy bills. A priority will be to build a more united country, strengthening the social, economic, and cultural bonds between England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. My government will work in cooperation with the devolved administrations, and it will work with all of the parties in Northern Ireland to support the return of devolved government. A new law will ensure that the United Kingdom retains its world-class regime protecting personal data, and proposals for a new digital charter will be brought forward to ensure that the United Kingdom is the safest place to be online. Legislation will also be introduced to modernise the court system and to help reduce motor insurance premiums. My government will initiate a full public inquiry into the tragic fire at Grenfell Tower to ascertain the causes and ensure that the appropriate lessons are learnt. To support victims, my government will take forward measures to introduce an independent public advocate who will act for bereaved families after a public disaster and support them at public inquests. My ministers will continue to invest in our gallant armed forces, meeting the NATO commitment to spend at least 2% of national income on defence, and delivering on the Armed Forces Covenant across the United Kingdom. My government will bring forward proposals to ensure that critical national infrastructure is protected to safeguard national security. A commission for countering extremism will be established to support the government in stamping out extremist ideology in all its forms, both across society and on the internet, so it is denied a safe space to spread. In the light of the terrorist attacks in Manchester and London, my government's counter-terrorism strategy will be reviewed to ensure that the police and security services have all the powers they need, and that the length of custodial sentences for terrorism-related offences are sufficient to keep the population safe. My ministers will ensure that the United Kingdom's leading role on the world stage is maintained and enhanced as it leaves the European Union. As a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, committed to spending 0.7% of national income on international development, my government will continue to drive international efforts that increase global security and project British values around the world. My government will work to find sustainable political solutions to conflicts across the Middle East. It will work to tackle the threat of terrorism at source by continuing the United Kingdom's leading role in international military action to destroy Daesh in Iraq and Syria. It will also lead efforts to reform the international system to improve the United Kingdom's ability to tackle mass migration, alleviate poverty, and end modern slavery. My government will continue to support international action against climate change, including the implementation of the Paris Agreement. Prince Philip and I look forward to welcoming Their Majesties King Felipe and Queen Letizia of Spain on a state visit in July. My government will host the Commonwealth Summit in April of next year to cement its relevance to this and future generations. Members of the House of Commons, Estimates for the public services will be laid before you. My Lords and members of the House of Commons, other measures will be laid before you. I pray that the blessing of Almighty God may rest upon your councils.
All right. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. We, you know, we have sometimes an hour flies back. And we just want to say that, you know, whatever Donald Trump, President Donald Trump is doing something right. Because the Her Majesty the Queen said that they're going to invest 2% of their, you know, GOP, 2% of their income, they're going to spend it for security. They're going to invest 0.7 in international development, but they are on the climate change. They're going to support the Paris Accord, something that President Trump withdrew America from. But she didn't mention the visit of Donald Trump to England. I know that there is an invite, but I'm not sure if the White House did answer. And it will be cordial if the White House will answer on the date so the Queen could mention. It was really not comfortable for her not to mention it, but because there is none given date. So if anybody come and rushing to conclusion that she didn't mention it, let me tell you, if you don't have a date, you cannot say you have a guest, right? So let me remind you, I'm back. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Let me salute you. Let me bless you. And let me thank you for your time. And we'll be there, God willing, next week. And thank you so much for Protect Company that sponsored this show. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful, wonderful day wherever you are. God bless. Ciao, ciao.